here we are at the Merrimack Repertory Theater, the jewel, the theatrical jewel on the banks of the Merrimack River. And I've done backstage podcasts before where we literally go backstage. We go, well, here's the wing and here's the tables and here's the hall of shame of all the other actors who've played here. But today I get to talk to the creative and business leadership of this 32-year-old institution, Charles Towers, the artistic director, and Tom Parrish, the executive director?
Yes.
Yes, I got it right. Good for me. Got it in one. Thank you for talking to me.
Hi, Austin.
Hi, Austin.
Hi, RSC fans.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 198, Merrimack Repertory Theater. The big story. I'm sorry, I'm in sportscaster mode because of sports. But the big story about the Merrimack Repertory Theater is that in the last 5 years, you guys have run in the black. In the, probably the toughest 5 years in the American economy for everybody, let alone the arts. And you guys have run in the black and done exceedingly well. But before we get into that, I think that's the big story.
And the RSC has been a part of that. Well, listen, you hold down two of the best-selling shows in our history.
Oh, yeah. Two of the top 10.
Yeah,
nice.
America and Bible.
Wow.
And if you don't do that with sports, we're going to be terribly disappointed. The bar is set high for you guys. I hope you realize that coming in.
No pressure.
I know, but no pressure.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. We have to reinvent ourselves with every show, which I guess you guys have to do every season.
Every year.
You know, every year. Who's the company historian? Who can give me a reduced history of the MRT?
The company was founded in 1979, a heyday of finding nonprofit theaters being sort of set up across America in the 70s. And it started out as a Lort theater company right from the get-go. They had advisors from TCG, et cetera, helping them get going. And it's they've had number four. So first was
Mark Kaufman and John Briggs.
Mark Kaufman and John Briggs worked together. And then it was Dan Shea. And then
David Kent.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then me. And then Tom joined me 4 years ago, which is what we always wanted, which was a partnership, not one person, not one producing artistic director who does all of it because it's too much.
And that had been the model for years. I know when I was at American Stage Festival, we had the classic artistic business leadership, divided leadership.
I think there's a reason that 95% of nonprofit theaters have this structure. It works. It's almost impossible for one person to do both. And while this company has a history of doing some terrific artistic work on stage, institutionally, when I got here, it was really not in great shape. Mm-hmm. It really, friends would ask me, what's it like? And I said, well, it feels like it's been here 3 years, not 23 years. Mm. It felt like it was just getting going. You know, kids in the basement, let's put on a play.
Yeah.
And we were literally in the basement at the time. I'm in my 10th season now. Over the past 9 years, and particularly over the past 4 years when Tom got here, he's been able to focus on the institution and stabilize it.
Right.
And while institutional stabilization is a boring phrase, and I can't even say it without slurring it, it's everything. You know, we're not struggling to make payroll every week, and I know theaters much bigger than us who are.
Yeah.
You know, it allows you to wake up in the morning and go to work with a clear head and do your artistic work and knock around and be creative and be funny and be serious and all the things you have to be in a rehearsal hall without that stress coming from down the hall.
Right.
You know?
Well, and I want to talk about institutional stabilization. I can't say it either.
Yeah, I told you.
That thing in a second. But getting back to this artistic thing, I mean, it's a joke amongst my actor friends, and maybe we're just Weisenheimers, but you know that there are many artistic directors around the country who are great administrators, but maybe not great directors. And you are not one of those, because of all the shows that I've seen of yours, they're all really vital and exciting, and I think not typical productions when they're directed by the artistic director of a theater.
Huh. Well, thank you.
Well, yeah, it's meant to be a compliment. I mean, I saw
it is. I'm a better director than I am an administrator.
Right. Well, it's different.
I'll admit that.
It's different sides of the brain.
Yeah.
It really is, the creative and the business.
And when I tried to do both for the years before Tom came, yes, you're in a right brain, left brain war. Mm-hmm. That neither side wins.
Yeah.
And that's the difference.
Yeah.
And I'm still learning now to free up the other side because it takes that long to get used to, right. Oh, I don't have to think about that anymore. I really should be reading this play. I really should be imagining this scene. I really should be. And it's great now. I just came from a meeting with my lighting designer, and that's sort of like how my time is taken up now, the way it should be.
The way it should be, yeah. So, Tom, where did you come from?
I moved here from San Diego four years ago. Mm-hmm. Been at a number of theaters around the country, and I was at San Diego Repertory Theater, where mm-hmm. I worked with you guys before.
Yep.
And this was a great opportunity to take the reins of a theater company, and it's been great since.
And so you're the first executive director of this place?
I'm the first
in a while?
I'm the first to hold that title. There have been managing directors before me.
Yeah,
I mean, there was one that lasted 1 year and one that lasted 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, there's no history of it. Tom is really, I have to say, is the first who's stuck and done it correctly and mm-hmm. made it work. So it's a completely different theater company because of it.
Cool. How do you do that?
Well, I work really hard. And
he does.
When I got here, you have to look at all of the problems that mm-hmm. are before you and develop solutions for them. And MRT's always had a really loyal audience, and that's one of our greatest strengths. Yeah. We have a really strong subscriber base, and they renew annually every year. And it's because of them, actually, that we can sort of produce the type of work that we do, the eclectic nature of it and the contemporary work. But using that strength provided a great opportunity for us to increase our fundraising efforts, cool. which is really what helped to turn the ship.
So increasing fundraising, but that's got to be hard too. Lowell is, what are we, 30 miles from Boston? I mean, are we in the shadow of Boston to a certain degree in terms of funding and maybe audiences as well?
We are in the shadow of Boston, but the people here are really supportive of Lowell and its institutions and very loyal to their institutions. And so that's a great opportunity. We don't receive a lot of funding from Boston. Most of it is from folks around here, but we're fortunate to be located and surrounded by Boston's wealthy suburbs. So
yeah, Boston's our best friend because all those Boston commuters
uh-huh.
make up our audience.
Right.
They all surround Lowell, and they're happy to come to Lowell to come to the theater.
And they don't want to fight getting into Boston at nighttime.
I don't.
Right, right.
the traffic, the $30 parking, the mm-hmm. whole, and the theater is just as good here, and sometimes better.
Right.
Nevertheless, Boston also is, yes, we're in the shadow of the hub. Boston is the city of New England.
Right.
You know, it's the hub city of all northern New England. So,
right.
But we have a separate identity that we're trying to maintain in Lowell. We're the fourth largest city in the state. I know that seems funny to say, but it's it's true. And Lowellians are really pushing forward to have its own urban identity.
Cool.
So we'll see what happens. Our future is tied to Lowell's development.
Well, and I guess you had to make some hard choices too. In terms of, it wasn't just fundraising, it was probably cutting costs as well.
Yes. When I got here, no one really knew it was a recession. At that point, it hadn't been declared yet.
Oh, okay.
We just knew it was hard. Uh-huh. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what it's like not in a recession and what we're able to do.
If we ever get that opportunity in America.
Right. Fingers crossed.
To get out of a recession.
Yeah.
But, we made a sizable budget cut a year before last, and we've absorbed it and moved on. But I've been working on a sort of motto since I got here. I just came up with small but excellent. I realized that I was going to focus on quality, not mm-hmm. size, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And the Reduce Shakespeare Company, look at your name. It fits perfectly with us because you create great theatricality with three guys.
Right.
You know, there's dozens of scenes, dozens of characters, dozens of jokes, dozens of attitude and, news perspectives. Mm-hmm. You guys bring everything to the table with three guys. And that kind of works so well with what we're doing here, which is, you know, try to we do cast sizes between 1 and 6.
Yeah.
And you're right in the middle. It's right. Perfect.
Well, and that speaks to the venue you're in,
yeah,
too. It's 300 seats over there at Liberty Hall, whatever it is, 300 and change.
Yeah, we only get away with this small but excellent because the house supports it.
This is Matt Walker, the artistic director of the Troubadour Theater Company in Los Angeles, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Podcast.
Where can you see the RSC? We'll be here in Lowell, Massachusetts, performing The Complete World of Sports Abridged at Merrimack Repertory Theater until October 3rd. Then we head up and down the east coast of America, and in October, return to Hong Kong and Singapore. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for The Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe, and check out our touring page for specific venue and ticket information.
How would your artistic vision change if you were at a different theater in a different town? Or would it? Is this a perfect match of artistic leadership and venue?
It wouldn't change much. We do, you know, 90% of the plays we do are the titles are unfamiliar to our audience.
Right.
Even some that maybe have been off Broadway or on Broadway even, but they're really unfamiliar to our audience.
Right.
And many things we do are regional premieres or world premieres. So it's right. So I didn't think this could, I didn't know if it could work or not. Because, yeah, you know, the rule of thumb is, oh, you have to do a couple of chestnuts for them and, you know, blah, 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 the artistic director rule of thumb. So my first couple of years here, I just crossed my fingers. And I mean, nothing against you guys, but they had never heard of the Bible, the complete word of God, which is in my first season here. You did it.
Yeah.
And they came out and went, oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
You know,
and they weren't scared of it either.
No, they weren't scared of it either.
Yeah.
So, so far, this is a wooden table. No, it's for Micah. You're hearing me knock on. We're able to keep doing those. What would I do differently? Yes, I'd begin to breathe out a little bit. Mm. The cast would be slightly larger, but it doesn't mean all of a sudden I would turn to old classics. Our classics have been like Arthur Miller's The Price and Albee's Delicate Balance, American classics.
Yeah.
Or Pinder's The Homecoming, you know, 50-year-old, 40-year-old
right.
classics. But I'm not drawn. I've done my Shakespeare. I don't have to go there.
Yeah.
I would continue to do American work, and I'd love to do just larger, more complex American work. That's the only difference.
Well, and Dee and I saw The Price, actually.
We
were here over the holidays when that was being done, however many years ago it was, and it was... You know, again, a tribute to your directorship, you know, I walked out of that thinking, The Price is Arthur Miller's greatest play.
Yeah.
You know, it's apparently it's not, according to scholars, but
You're not wrong. You're not, you know, you may be funny, but you're not stupid. I mean, there is actually a discussion going on about, certainly if Death of a Salesman didn't exist, the Price would be considered his greatest play.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up there.
And it's a credit not only to you, but to your audiences that, as you were saying, you do mostly regional premieres. I mean, a lot of artistic directors, we've said this before, a lot of artistic directors will say, yes, we want to work on the RSC's new show. And then we say, good, we've got a new show. Can we bring it to your theater? And they'll say, yeah, could you go take it to other theaters and work out the kinks first? But you're letting us come here and work out the kinks of the sports show. And I'm looking through your...
And what if we're wrong?
What if you're wrong? Well, that's the risk. But I'm looking through your brochure for this season. East Coast premiere, regional premiere, world premiere, regional premiere. I love the title of that, too, by the way. Two Jews walk into a bar. Right already. That's
walk into a war.
I've read it wrong. So, yeah, exactly. Even better. Yep. Even better. Regional premiere. I mean, but that's a credit to you and it's a credit to your audience. That they will accept that. They won't go, where is you can't take it with you?
Right.
Why are you not doing Arsenic and Old Lace? How much of a challenge is that to sell, Tom Parrish?
It is challenging to sell, and we basically have to sell the story. Mm-hmm. When we're writing the marketing copy, we've never seen the show either, so we have to... Yeah. Try and envision what the play is going to look like and be. And we spent a lot of time talking with Charles and the artists so that we can try and predict what it's going to be when it actually is up on its feet in front of an audience. But really focusing on the story, and because that's all we really have to focus on, and the writers who write them. I mean, we do have a number of writers that we've worked with repeatedly, so people have a sense of the type of play that it's going to be, what it's sort of going to feel like. But we're able to do it all because of the subscriber base.
Right.
Really. 80% of our tickets are from our season ticket holders.
That's fantastic. And, that's a fantastic number.
Yeah. And we have so many subscribers because we offer an incredible value.
Yeah.
How many more people would come if we did The Importance of Being Earnest?
Right.
I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
200? 500? 1,000? None?
Right.
The RSC's numbers are nicely up there. A production of Dinah Was that we did about sort of a musical play about Dinah Washington. The numbers are up there. You mm-hmm. know, would Importance of Being Earnest, just because it's famous, push the numbers higher than that? I can't. Plus all those Victorian costumes. Plus right. it's been done 100 times.
Right.
Are people dying for that? I honestly don't know. But my suspicion is we wouldn't all of a sudden go through the roof with it.
Yeah. Well, even then though, we still are in a 300 seat venue,
yeah.
and there are only so many seats to sell.
It's true.
So we average just over 70%
right.
of capacity sold, and so there's not a ton of room to right. to fill.
To go through the roof, huh?
Well, and to a, so to a certain degree, it's you know, the rallying cry is small but excellent, and it's the work, stupid.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you invest your resources into the plays at hand.
I'd rather be small than where we are right now than a multi-million dollar theater tottering with yeah. some multi-million dollars of debt and, right. and who got sort of and a big new building.
Right.
I mean, there are some theaters out there that are just not in an enviable position.
Well, and there's a
some
lot
of our sister theaters, you know, for whom we feel. I mean, we don't want anybody to.
Yeah.
We want everybody to survive, but.
Well, and some of them already haven't. Some other smaller New yeah. Englands haven't.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah, haven't survived.
Haven't survived.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
boy, in 15 years, you know, we lost America Stage Festival mm-hmm. up in Nashua, mm-hmm. Milford, Nashua, yeah. Stage West in Springfield, yeah. Worcester Foothills Theater in Worcester. Mm-hmm. It's not good around here.
So I guess that speaks not only to your audience but to the city of Lowell.
Yeah, and I think there was a time when we were at risk of following mm-hmm. all of those theaters mm-hmm. And the community really stepped in and they've stuck with us and realized what we provide for this community and they've been supporting us ever since, to the point now where we are one of the most stable and financially healthy theaters.
Cool. Well, so, and do you have to say, are there times at which, Tom, you have to say, no, we can't do that? Or is Charles very good about not asking for things we can't do? You know,
Charles is good at self-policing. He knows where the line of our resources are, and
yeah.
And he's respectful of that. He hasn't asked me to try to do something that he knows.
I mean, I know it looks like you're 12, but you're probably older than that, right?
I am
older. So you can put your foot down if you had to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, the other choice is, yes, you have this one fantastic production and you close the theater down.
Yeah.
Who wants that? Anybody?
Right.
Raise your hands. No, I mean, so if you want to continue your art, if you want to continue to communicate with an audience through the art of theater, then you have to be mindful of keeping an institution and keeping people employed. And
right.
it all goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
To me, there's no substitute for sanity. Am I too conservative? Who knows? It's a very interesting question. I mean, there are people, there are directors out there who grab for wilder brass rings than me.
Right.
But I still like the human story. I still like human scale. I still like literature, words. What I like about you guys is you're smart sophomoric. You know, you're silly and sophomoric, mm-hmm. and yet there's words going whipping around out there that require thinking. You mm-hmm. have to listen.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to get the joke, you got to listen, and you've got to remember the definition of that word from when you first learned it in college, you know. And that's a great blend when you're going to go after what is, after all, an audience-grabbing, humorous evening, which is what you guys create. But it's smart. There's a level of intelligence that I love. And I think that's what the audience loves, because you guys really do bridge. Sometimes we have plays that appeal to our subscriber audience but don't sell single tickets. Sometimes we have plays that sell single tickets. We had a couple last year, big single-ticket sales. Subscriber audience wasn't that happy with them. It's like, oh, interesting. So the subscribers kind of want more thoughtful, you know, serious uh-huh. work, and the single ticket one. And you guys pretty much bridge both of those. You satisfy both camps in a way that some others don't.
That's it for this week's Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your plans for institutional stabilization via email to feedback@reduceshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on our podcast page and interact with other fans at our website, reduceshakespeare.com, and our Reduce Shakespeare Company fan page at facebook.com. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reduceshakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, autistic director Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Crystal Melton. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Matt Walker, artistic director of the Troubadour Theater Company in Los Angeles. Check out their latest Shakespeare pop music mashup, A Wither's Tale, and get ready for their holiday show, The First Joel. Check them out at Truby.com. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 198/594 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.